This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I don't know why people continue to doubt this guy. There was people that were writing him off in the, you know, after the 2013 season, and he just continues to amaze people. I don't know if he reinvents himself, but he's got such a passion for the game. He's not the prettiest of hockey players, but he is one of the most powerful. And he just plays the game with so much drive and determination. I do not bet against him ever, because I've always believed in this guy, and he just continues to bring his best efforts every night.
That, of course, Alan May, brought to you by the D.C. Lottery, are winning Never Felt So Good. Play the new Washington Capitals 2018 Stanley Cup champion Scratcher Day, and you can win $50,000 instantly. It's funny, man. There were a couple years ago where we were saying that he was looking overweight. We were calling him fat.
I think it was kind of true. And I think even McPhee or whatever agreed with us.
And his production did go down just a couple seasons ago. Now, Alan says it was just because he didn't play enough minutes. And maybe that's the case. Because when you look at his stats, his career stats, you know, you went to see what was the most goals he ever scored in a season is. But for the last 6 or 7 years, he's always right around 50. Right around 50, you know, 53, 55, whatever. He's always right around there. And then he had that 1 year with 33. It's like, what was going on? I don't know if that was the same year that we called him fat. I don't think so. I think we said that years ago.
I can't remember.
But, man, I do wonder how long he can do this. I personally don't think 33 is that old. Like, some people, like, Cakes is an ageist and always thinks that once you hit, like, 30, you can't perform well in sports. But there are all kinds of guys who do well. Maybe they're the outliers, but, I mean, Roger Federer is still kicking ass.
No, I know, I think he's an outlier.
That sport, it tends to be younger. But in, you know, the NBA, LeBron's 33. I would say he's probably on the downside of his prime, but he's still in his prime.
He's on the downside for sure.
But he's still one of the best players in the game.
Certain guys are freaks. LeBron's a freak.
And you may start to slow down slightly in your 30s, but it's not super dramatic. Maybe when you get to your upper, you know.
Well, you got to consider the wear 30s. And tear, though. Like, it's not relatable to the rest of us because we don't have that you know, just the punishment that they endure, you know, for 82 games in a season.
Yeah, and it kind of depends on the sport.
Yeah, and especially in hockey. But he happens to be a freak. He's like a LeBron. He's like an Adrian Peterson. He's just a different guy.
Although in hockey, there have been guys who play well into their 40s.
That's why I think that the record, Gretzky's record, I agree with Greenberg, it might be within reason. Now, I don't think he's going to score 50 goals a year for the next 7 years or whatever it might take. But
he can front load it and then back it up with some 30s.
Front load it and then get some 20s
right
into his late 30s. Because he's always going to be able to be a power play threat. He's always going to be able to snipe from his office. You know, but the wear and tear, the physical nature of his play, I think that's always been Alan May's argument is, you know, how long can that body really, really survive, you know, being the most physical player on the ice?
I do wonder, look, it's tough to win a championship in any sport, but now they got over the hump. What if they start rolling? Like, I mean, the Penguins won back-to-back. Why can't the Caps do it?
Hey, I'm starting to get a little of that, but I don't want to jinx them. I'm starting to feel
you
that.
Can't jinx them.
The way they're playing right now, I feel like, wow, man, they got a real shot here. Real shot here to do something. But we
I
all
looked
know,
at goal differential. There are a few teams that have a better differential than them right now, but in the Metro, in their division, they're plus 22. There's nobody even close to them. In their division.
They'd be good. Just look, I'm no expert by any stretch, but it just seems like they're a little uneven, they're a little spotty defensively. You know, some games they're great, and other games they're giving up 5-6 goals and having to try to win a shootout all of a sudden. You know, they're blowing 5-2 leads.
A lot of people thought, you know, including Alan May when we talked to him, that there might be not necessarily a huge hangover, but they'd come out of the gate slow. I mean, I think they're doing pretty damn well.
No, they're doing great. They're ahead of where they were last year, I think, by a few games. Especially with this 5-game winning streak.
So, again, that was Alan May, brought to you by D.C. Lottery, where winning never felt so good. Play the new Washington Capitals 2018 Stanley Cup champion Scratcher today, and you can win $50,000 instantly. So we wanted to shift from the Caps back to the Redskins, and we were talking about this during the break. The Josh Johnson story is great.
Right.
And you do wonder how long it's going to last and whether it's sustainable for these last couple of games. What if he is able to sustain it? What if they beat the Titans? You were talking about the Colt McCoy factor, that Colt McCoy, apparently, they haven't put him on injured reserve because there's some hope that he would be ready for the last game. But what I'd say is, if you beat the Tennessee Titans, regardless of how it looks, you got to go with Josh Johnson the next game.
You got to go with your guy that's 2-0.
To. Don't you think so?
I know the problem is, I think more of the playbook is open to Colt. There's obviously more a higher comfort factor with Colt. But maybe it would be perfect if Colt is actually good enough. Apparently, he's sending videos to Jay of him working out. It's like, hey, man, I'm getting better. I'm getting better here.
But working out on your own different than working out with a team.
Well, that's what I said about Colin Kaepernick. I've said that.
Yeah, but the alternatives to Colin Kaepernick weren't working out with the team either.
Well, no, those guys were. Really, they were different teams. They were different teams.
But not at the time.
Okay, but within 2 years.
One guy was playing basketball and Sanchez was on the sofa.
I don't want to get distracted, but the cap issue is that
it's not directly analogous.
It's not directly, but it's similar. The cap hadn't been working with a team in 2 years. It takes a while to get back into all that. It wouldn't be fair to Cap. But he certainly deserves to be in a camp and get a shot. But maybe that perfect scenario would be, let's say they could find a way to steal a win, and then you have Colt active on Sunday. He'd be the backup, so at any point, if Josh struggled.
And then Sanchez is out of the picture. Yeah, we want to hear from you.
But I think for next year, the more interesting question, though, is also, for next year, where does he factor in?
Yeah, do you want to see him in the mix? Now, there are contract situations. They may be stuck to contracts, which forces them to bring guys back. But would you want to see Josh Johnson on the Redskins roster next year as a backup? 800-636-1067.
Has he done enough to earn a spot on the team next year? In my heart, I want to say yes, but my brain tells me, obviously, of course not.
It's only a game and a half, but when you actually look at the numbers for a game and a half, they're pretty favorable. He's almost run for 100 yards, has a touchdown running the football. He's thrown for well over 300 yards, pretty good completion percentage, has the two touchdowns, does have the one pick. I do wonder, though, the Tennessee Titans, 8-6, playing for a playoff spot. Currently in the AFC, the Ravens, at the same record at 8-6, are the last wild card team. So they have everything to play for, and I guess you could say the same thing about the Redskins. Really good defense. Now you've seen a good amount of film on Josh Johnson and the Redskins offense.
I do wonder
how he's going to fare. My guess is it's not going to be pretty on Saturday, but if it is, to answer the first question, no chance I go back to Colt McCoy. If you want to chime in, 800-636-1067. And to answer the second question, if he pulls off a win against the Tennessee Titans, yeah, why not bring him back in camp?
Well, no, he definitely comes back in camp. That's a given. But here's the question. What is the realistic feasibility of him being on the roster next year? Alex, unless he retires, right, Alex is probably going to be at least a minimum on an injury reserve to start the year, you would think, based on what we've heard and all the drama that's been going on.
I still throw out this possibility. It's a major cap hit. I understand it. But to me, there is a possibility, and it's cold-blooded. It is seriously cold-blooded. But you just say, all right, let's just cut him and eat it now because he's not going to be our quarterback
of the
future.
Well, that would be if you knew 100% it's a career ender.
Right.
If you knew that. Which I think is possible.
Or you just decide, we're going to move on. Alex, if you decide Alex is only going to play half of year two of his contract, right? Let's say he'd be ready at midway point of the season. And you decide.
I don't think they're going to say.
You decide you're going to go Colt McCoy as your starter just because he's got
they're
a
They're not going to admit they made a mistake.
And you draft somebody, then you could go cold-blooded.
They're not going to do that. They're not. He's too classy of a guy. They're not going to admit they made a mistake and go, you know what? We think he can come back and play, but we already determined in the 9 games or whatever it wasn't good enough. And so we're going to move and take a $40 million cap hit. No way they're doing that.
The only way
they would do it is if it was, in fact, a career ender. And I know
there are some people that are adamant against talking about wins and losses with quarterbacks. I think it would be hard-pressed to whack a guy who led you to a 6-3 record.
They're not. I'm telling you, they're not going to do it. That's not a scenario. Unless it was an absolute, like he's retiring. It's a career ender. And then just say, you know, we're going to be poop anyway. We'll just take the $40 million.
Because even if you're able to draft the silly, like let's say the scouts, the whole organization, they love Drew Locke, right? Who's the quarterback in Missouri. Say they all love him. And he's And he's right there in the first round, whenever wherever they draft, 14 or 15. They didn't think he was going to be available. They draft Drew Lock. Even if you draft who you think is going to be the franchise quarterback of the future, Alex Smith's a good mentor. He's been a good backup in the past.
Look, I think it's crazy talk. I think Alex Smith is going to be a part of this organization next year, unless he retires.
But what you're saying
so
is...
So hold on. Can I finish the scenario? So I think Alex is going to be somehow going to be accounted for, probably at minimum on injury reserve. So that leaves up a spot. Colt's under contract. Colt, they love him.
Right.
Even though he's injury prone, they love him. They're going to draft a rookie for sure. So that's two spot. That's three quarterbacks right there.
There's no real room.
Nobody even keeps three quarterbacks.
Right.
So even if they keep Alex on injury reserve, draft
they can even
a quarterback.
Keep, Kevin Hogan this year.
Yeah. There's really no room for Josh. I'm rooting for him so hard, too.
So he's basically playing for
he's
an
auditioning
invite somewhere
for everybody.
Else.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I think they'll bring him in camp, but I don't think they'll keep him.
But by the way, let's say they beat the Titans. 8-7 now. Serious playoff sweat. Because now all of a sudden, and maybe Minnesota loses. Maybe you're in the driver's seat at this point. Because Minnesota could lose to Detroit. And let's say the Eagles lose. I think they have who do the Eagles have this week? I feel like it's a really tough game. Anyway, let's say the Eagles lose.
Texans.
They've got the Texans, yeah. I mean, the Texans have been rolling, right? So the Eagles very easily could lose, fall to 7-8. Vikings go to Detroit. Detroit could beat them. They lose. Redskins, with Josh Johnson, pull off an upset in Tennessee. But Josh Johnson doesn't play that well. Let's say he throws a couple of picks. They survive it. I don't think that'll happen. He's going to run for like...
The only way they're going to win is if he plays 55 yards.
But the defense plays well. Defense forces a couple turnovers. They shut down Derrick Henry. The Titans don't have this prolific offense. You talked about it yesterday. They've only scored three more points than the Redskins all season long.
They're pretty bad on offense.
So they win another game like they did this past week, 16-13. All right? They win 16-13. Josh Johnson, his line is something like 13 for 24, 170 yards, two picks.
Mm-hmm. No touchdowns.
Then what do you do? You're playing for a playoff spot. Colt says... I'm ready to go.
Probably,
I can practice.
Probably still start Josh, and then at any sign of turmoil, if Colt's ready, then you'd bring Colt in.
Well, then it might be too late.
Well, first sign of turmoil. Not waiting until it's over. I don't know. It's a really tough spot. I don't think they're going to be anxious to throw Colt to the wolves, right? Coming off a broken leg. It would be a miraculous recovery for him to be available. I think
it would
be miraculous.
It's not like he has this resume recently where he's been leading them to wins.
I think it's unlikely because I think we're going to lose to the Titans. The more intriguing question to me is, long term, does Josh have a home here? Let's say he finishes out. Let's say they find a way. Okay, they go whatever. He plays okay, but they lose, but he plays okay. You know, he hangs in there. He's professional. I don't think he has a spot here.
I don't think he does as long as Colt McCoy is under contract.
Yeah, and Colt
is. He can't pay two backups, really.
But they're paying Colt nothing. Like, NFL, nothing. They're paying $3 million.
They're paying that starter a lot, though.
Paying the starter a ton. Let's go to Mo and Largo if you want to chime in. The Josh Johnson situation is just fascinating to me because it's such a great story. Mo, what's up?
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's up, man?
I think his existence is directly tied to our coach because he brought him in. I'd imagine that the next coach wouldn't be too interested in a guy who pretty much made his first start in the last 8 years. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So they got to draft somebody. I'd imagine that Colt still has enough of a pull within the organization to where he still has his spot.
I think Colt is here for sure, and they're going to draft somebody for sure, and then they have Alex.
Mo, what did you think of his play on the field? You're a Redskins fan. What did you think of Josh?
I thought it was a bit suspect. I mean, he was able to be mobile and whatnot, but as far as his throwing ability and being able to read the field, it showed that he hadn't played much and the reason why he was a backup. So, I mean, it is what it is. But as long as we keep winning, that's all we can ask for.
See, it's hard for me on TV to tell whether he was able to read the defense as well. I just think that when you look at the Redskins, generally speaking, this for whichever guy is under center, whoever's playing quarterback, their receivers don't get much separation. So when you – every ball to Josh Doctson, there is a corner within a half step of him. Have you ever seen him generate separation? He's known for the 50-50 balls. So, you know, sometimes you see it from Vernon Davis or Jameson Crowder, but it's not like they have – much to work with. So it's hard for me to determine reading defenses if guys are covered. What are you supposed to do?
I thought it didn't look that dissimilar from when Alex Smith was under center,
right?
To be honest with you. So I think he deserves a spot somewhere in the league. I'm afraid I don't think there's going to be room for him here. Unless they do something crazy and bold and they actually just move on from Alex, which I don't see happening. But even then, it's going to be difficult because you got Colt. They're going to draft one. Most teams don't even keep. I mean, what percentage of teams are even keeping three quarterbacks?
Yeah, but you maybe fights for a job.
I just love for him to find a spot.
Maybe eat the Colt contract, EB, if you love Josh.
No, they love Colt.
Jay loves Colt.
Jay loves Colt.
This current organization, if Jay gets whacked out, I think Mo's right.
I don't think Jay's going anywhere.
All right, coming up next, we're going to shift gears. We'll talk some NBA. The Wizards, of course, still kind of floundering around. They had a four-game losing streak. They snapped that against the Lakers with an impressive win. But are there guys, Bradley Beal, John Wall, maybe even Otto Porter Jr., on the trade block? We'll talk to Sekou Smith from NBA TV next here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. You want to follow along on TV. Just a heads up, Skins play on Saturday. That means we're going to be out at Glory Days Grill doing our pregame show, 2 o'clock. And this week, we're hitting the Glory Days Grill in Manassas. So put it on your calendar, stop by, say hello. Glory Days Grill in Manassas on Saturday, kicking off at 2 o'clock. But join us right now to talk some hoops. Joins us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, Sekou Smith, senior writer for NBA.com. You can watch him on NBA TV, and you can see Sekou on an all-new episode of Beyond the Paint on NBA TV tonight, 11 p.m. He takes a look at the mental health issues in the NBA and how the league and Players Association are bringing the issue forward. Good morning, Sekou.
Morning, fellas. How y'all doing?
So you're hitting some heavy issues there tonight.
Yeah. It's not the wild and crazy stuff I usually get to do on NBA TV tonight. We stepped off into the mental health and awareness area that has really become a big deal, obviously, in the league since DeMar DeRozan and Kevin Love spoke out about their issues. So we kind of examine, what the league and the Players Association are doing. And Sean Powell has an accompanying piece on Ron Artest that'll be on NBA.com today as well. So it's just a bit of the serious for us for a change.
Is he back to Ron Artest?
I call him Ron Artest only because I covered him back in Indiana when he was Ron Artest. The rest of the world can call him Meta World Peace. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Sekou, so here in Washington, the Wizards, of course, have gotten out of the gates quite slow. They're a frustrating team to watch because take a game like the Boston game last week. You see a lot of effort. They ended up losing that game in overtime. And then they'll lose to the Brooklyn Nets, and you just wonder about effort and intensity. And then they come out and then they'll beat the Lakers and John Wall will go off. First of all, before we talk about the trade, what has kind of been your impression of the Wizards as a team? Because they do have talent, but it's just that it doesn't translate into consistently winning.
Yeah, they've been very confusing to watch. They've got the raw talent you would need to compete, but it doesn't seem to add up chemistry-wise. They just haven't had the kind of chemistry you'd expect from a team with that many veteran pieces. Now, obviously, the Dwight Howard experiment got derailed early, so you don't have that to look forward to if you're a Wizards fan. But I just think it's one of those deals where they've been searching for an identity for a few years now. They fancy themselves, one of the East's best teams. And when you have John Wall and Bradley Beal, you should feel like that. But again, it just hasn't. It hasn't connected from a chemistry standpoint. And I think that's their biggest issue is we don't know what kind of chemistry you're going to have from night to night. And if you can't count on having a team on the same accord, you're going to play up and down the way they have.
Yeah, it's so frustrating watching it just as a fan. I mean, we know their track record. They demonstrated again the other night the way they played against the Lakers and even in the loss against the Celtics, against the better teams. They come ready to play more often than not. And it's just sort of the random, the run-of-the-mill, the average NBA games where they kind of just, just go through the motions, and it's just maddening. I mean, the difference in John Wall like the other night, and then on an average night, it's just unbelievable the way he plays on both ends when he attacks the. He can't be stopped when he attacks the basket the way he has in some of these last few games.
No, there's no question. I mean, he was outstanding against the Lakers. That's the John Wall you want to see every night. You know, if you're a Wizards fan, or if you're a Wizards player, if you're one of his teammates, you know, if he's the leader of your team, you got to be able to know and kind of, you know, lean on a certain level of production and energy and performance out of John Wall. And, you know, he's had his injury issues to deal with. We all know that. And I think there's been this deal for him where he's a talent on the level of the very best players in the league at his position, but he doesn't get that kind of respect. And I think that's something that maybe bothers him, you know, and it keeps him searching, you know, trying to figure out why he's not held in that same regard. But if you're talking about winning and winning big, you got to have your leaders in a comfort zone and in a position where they're bringing up the performance of everybody else around them. And to me, that's where John has to take that next step. He's got to make that seventh, eighth, or ninth guy on the team a better player because of his presence and the way he operates on the floor.
And you know this, there's something there when you talk about chemistry where last year when he was out, all of a sudden the assist numbers went up. And John's one of the best assist guys in the game, you know, when you look at his personal stats. But the team stats, all of a sudden they go up. And I know the first game that he was out recently, they had a 35 assist game. So there's got to be something there chemistry-wise. Now, they end up making a trade. I don't know if this was about chemistry. I just feel like they probably thought that they couldn't re-sign Kelly Oubre eventually, and they moved him for Trevor Ariza. To me, it feels like a lateral move. Like, it's not going to change much with the Wizards. What's your take on it?
I disagree. I'm a big Trevor Ariza fan.
Okay.
And one of the reasons is I watched him last year in Houston. And I watched, you know, I had Houston last year from the first game of the playoffs till that game 7 in the Western Conference Finals when they lost. So I was a Texan, basically, you know, for the first 2.5 months of the playoffs. Trevor Ariza brings a sense of ease in a locker room because of his presence and the way he operates, the professionalism, the doing it on both ends every night out there, you know, the consummate pro. He adds an element to your locker room that might not otherwise be there. And if you don't believe it, look at Houston's struggles without him. Everybody thought, oh, we can get somebody who can do what Trevor Ariza does. It's like, it's not just about the raw numbers sometimes. Sometimes it's about the presence you have, the vibe you kind of send out as a veteran leader on a team that allows everything else to fall into place. I wish they'd have had Ariza from the start of the season. Then we might be looking at a different season for the Wizards. And I'm not trying to heap too much on his plate as a player, but I'm telling you, veteran leadership in the NBA is undervalued in ways that I don't think the average person can understand. You look at teams and kind of compute, why does this team work? Why does this group work together? And I look at guys like Ariza and Andre Iguodala and Al Horford and think to myself, you need one of those types of guys in your locker room and in your mix as a team, just to add that element of ease for everybody else to know that you got a grown-up in the room, basically.
Well, you know, I mean, kind of in the same similar sort of way, we experienced that when we had Paul Pierce that year, right?
Yeah,
that veteran.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's when they had
their
most success.
And you had an elite level of, you had a Finals MVP version
right.
of that veteran you need in your locker room. We all know how good the Wizards were and that edge that he brought and that calm that he gave those younger guys when John Wall and Bradley Beal were younger, but just as talented, that made a huge difference.
But here, Sekou, here's what's frustrating, I think, for us as fans is, like, I think we all appreciate Trevor Ariza when he can bring to a team, but we feel like, man, Kelly Oubre, he's a player on the rise. We had to have been able to have done more, though, sort of long-term. Like, just renting Ariza for this year, it seems like we just got the worst of this deal. Couldn't they have done better for an asset like Oubre, who's so young and so talented, still improving?
I don't know if you could have. And we, I think we all understand why they had to move him. You look at the contracts they've already handed out. There was simply going to be no money to spend on what Kelly Oubre might command on the free agent market. So you're compounding some other questionable decisions with perhaps another bad one, you know, by letting Oubre go. If he goes somewhere else and ends up reaching his full potential, yeah, you're going to wish you had him. But those are the things those are the hard decisions you have to make as an NBA front office when this, you know, the salary spike a few summers ago twisted the world upside down. Teams have been dealing with that fallout ever since. And some guys who you wouldn't want to have paid the kind of money you did are walking around with those nice big contracts, and it's costing you on the other end if you're one of these teams like the Wizards.
Talking NBA with Sekou Smith. You can watch him on NBA TV. Read his work at NBA.com. He's got the special Beyond the Paint, 11 o'clock tonight on NBA TV. Now, this is my grasper theory, and you could refute it all, but the Lakers had expressed interest, at least you're hearing, in Trevor Ariza. Apparently, the Suns didn't want to trade, or the owner didn't want to trade Trevor Ariza to the Lakers, right? What if the Wizards are basically stashing him to package him with a Bradley Beal or John Wall to the Lakers down the road? Because there's at least been rumors that the Lakers may want to make some moves.
Well, I mean, if that's the case, then you got one of the smoothest and shrewdest front offices operating right now, because if they're that advanced in their operations,
well, we don't think they are.
He's been around a while. He's never been accused of being advanced.
Right. I'm just saying, if you buy into that theory, then you're playing some high level fantasy basketball right now if you're the Wizards.
I'm not buying into the theory. I'm spinning the theory. This one I made up, Sekou.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying, and if you are planning a long-term reboot, you know, if you're the Wizards, then yeah, that's an excellent place to start if you think about it. Because look at the young assets on that Lakers team. Tell me there aren't a couple of young faces you wouldn't mind having if you're the Lakers. If you could get your hands, or if the Wizards, if you could get your hands on a Brandon Ingram and start over, you know, and start to recalibrate your team in Washington. I could see where that would make sense. I could see the crumbs of a bigger plan, maybe starting with moving Ariza and whatever package you could, you know, whatever talent you could move to the Lakers to get some of their young assets in return.
Yeah, I'm wondering, what is the league-wide perception of Ernie? Because you won't find – listen, he's a nice guy. Everybody agrees to that. But you won't find one person in this town that defends him other than maybe Ted and I guess maybe some people within sort of the organization. But you won't find one fan, you won't find one radio host, you won't find one columnist in this area that doesn't all agree that they need to move on. He needs to be relieved of his duties. What is the national perspective, though, of Ernie?
Yeah, I don't think it's as negative as that. I think it's just kind of a head-scratching perspective. Like, you know, what are they doing? Like, what are they building? What are they trying to do in Washington? And Ernie, you know, you don't know what's in a guy's head. But you can't discern what his master plan is for the Wizards. And that's kind of the thing that makes people look at him and wonder, is he long for that job? They've been there so long, and, you know, he's got some assistants under him, Tommy Shepard being one of them, who are guys that you get nothing but raves about around the league. Everybody loves Shep. But, yeah, there's a disconnect in terms of what they're doing and what you see on the floor. And, guys, we got to be honest. John Wall has right or wrong, has become the face of what's going on in Washington. There's a split amongst, you know, people in the league about John Wall. Some people love him and think he's too talented to do anything other than try and build a team around him. And then there are other people that look at John and point to his deficiencies, the fact that he's not a better shooter, the fact that he's had injury issues, and say you can't be on the hook for the kind of money you're going to be in the coming years with a player like that. So a lot of it is on Ernie, but a lot of it is on John Wall as well in terms of the perspective of that team around the league.
Hey, you mentioned, you know, following Houston last year. And, of course, Houston, within a game of getting the NBA Finals, maybe if Chris Paul doesn't go down, they make it to the NBA Finals and knock off Golden State. This year, of course, off to a rough start. Do you think they get it together? I saw parts of the game where Harden went off, and they just – you know, look, Harden is so talented, and Chris Paul, when healthy, is still such a great player. Clint Capella in the middle. I got to believe that they move up the standings in the West.
Yeah, they're probably due for a move up with Harden playing as well as he has. But guys, they had lightning in a bottle last year, and they let the flame go out. They had game seven on their home floor, and a team that had the greatest offensive season in league history, you know, by the metrics, couldn't make a shot when they needed one. They right. couldn't make a three-point shot with their season on the line. Sometimes that's a learning, you know, moment and something that you, you know, a hurdle you have to get over the next year, and you move on and keep climbing. Other times you watch that window of opportunity close in that moment. And I'm not sure that I see the Rockets as presently constituted continuing to climb the way they did last season. Maybe that was their high water mark, and they're going to be what they are going forward. But I don't see a championship team in Houston.
That said, in the West, even though they currently would be out of the playoffs, they're like 3.5 out of the 3 seed.
Yeah, I mean, it's tight. I mean, it's tight like that in the West. But I look at it like this. Every year I say to myself, how many teams am I looking at around the league that could win a championship? Not who could finish in the top 3 or 4 in their conference and make it to the, you know, conference semifinals and pat themselves on the back, say we had a good year. How many teams do I look at and say they could legitimately get to the finals and pull out 4 games with everything on the line in June? And Houston is not one of those teams. I don't know that there are 5 total in the league on both sides that I think are true championship teams. I think Toronto and Golden State. Yeah, I mean, Toronto and Golden State look like championship caliber teams to me. I think Boston's talented enough to do it, but we got to see them, you know, in that light. But if you buy, like, are you buying into teams like Denver, you know, and some of these other upstarts in the West as championship teams? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have to see more than 25, 30 games of them playing at a high level before I'm convinced they're ready to step into that void and win a championship.
No, I totally agree with you. I'm not buying as a championship team Milwaukee or Indiana or even Philly. Philly may be an outside shot if they get it together, but they've kind of slumped here of late. I know Jimmy Butler has missed some games, but pretty much I would say Toronto, Boston, Golden State.
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, like I said, I mean, we're not even at Christmas. So, I mean, we'll hold them to a high bar this early in the season, but I just need to see more. I mean, I need to see teams sustain a higher level of play for a longer period of time before I'm convinced they're ready to win a title.
Seiko, see if you can spin my theory and make it happen. So I just look when I think it was Stephen A. Smith that had that text message where an anonymous Wizards player said that John's the problem. And I kind of buy that because, you know, it was I don't see it as coincidence. The whole team was doing the whole everybody eats thing when he was gone last year, and then they seemed to flourish. He's the best player. He's the most talented. And when he's engaged, like he has been against Boston and the Lakers in the last week, he's an amazing talent. It's just not consistent, and there does seem to be chemistry issues. So if somehow they could move him, that's what I think they should do. And that, yeah, that contract, which nobody's really going to want.
Y'all are writing letters to Santa that you know he can't deliver.
There
those
you go.
That's true.
You guys are killing me. But I'll do my best. I'll send it to the North Pole and see if we can't make it happen.
Perfect. Right. Appreciate it, Seiko.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate
it. Check out tonight, 11 o'clock, the special is Beyond the Pain on NBA TV.
All right. That's good stuff.
Yeah, it's a damn contract. They have two – to me, I've been saying the last couple years, in terms of at his position – John Wall's great, but I still wouldn't rank him in the top 5 point guards in the NBA. I would rank Bradley Beal at the top 5 in his position. Like, I think Bradley Beal is actually a better player. John Wall may put up better overall numbers on this team, doesn't score the points that Bradley Beal averages.
Yeah, but this team goes as John Wall goes.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to lose Bradley Beal.
Yeah,
probably the most likely to be moved if they're going to move anybody.
Well, no, why can't we move Otto? Didn't people say Otto would be...
Seems to be a stretch.
1 of 3. Take Otto off our hands.
What GMs want Otto Porter?
Take Komotos Otto off our hands.
Give me a break.
And then bring in more veterans like Ariza, you know, like a Paul Pierce type.
Bring a bunch of old guys on the
team.
Well,
you need somebody to kind of keep them in check. Because these guys feel like they can sleepwalk through the season and pick and choose when they're going to give effort.
Yeah.
You need, you know, the old, you know, old school kind of guys that are going to keep these guys honest.
They have the Hawks tonight. I believe it was the Hawks was up next. Let me check who they have, because that's the type of game that they have.
It'll be a dud.
They should win, but They've been losing those type of games.
They won't look anywhere anything like they did defensively the other night, where they were going after everything.
Yeah, they're at Atlanta
they're
tonight.
They're switching. They're fiercely playing defense. John wasn't just like trail blocking guys. He was protecting the rim. It was unbelievable.
They beat Atlanta on the road earlier this year, had the four-game losing streak, which included a loss to the pathetic Cleveland Cavaliers and the Brooklyn Nets. And then they respond like they did against the Lakers. So they tease you. They give you games like that. We'll see what they do tonight.
Does anybody want to bet on a dud tonight?
I'll bet they beat the Hawks. The Hawks are horrible.
All right, I'm going to bet they give up 116 points, 118 points.
I wouldn't bet against that. I mean, that's pretty much all
it's
average.
It's almost a given.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, we're the Junkies. Coming right back.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Welcome back, Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. About an hour ago, I was on Twitter and I saw Valdez had tweeted something. I don't know if it was from this morning or yesterday or the day before, but it's the first thing that I saw. And he just said that he's enjoying his time off and he could get used to the retirement life. And I'm coming off a week off where I would sleep till about 7, 7:30. The baby wakes up around then and I could definitely get used to it. And then,
but he's like 30.
Right.
I mean, he's barely started his professional life.
But we all like time off.
Of course.
We all like time off. And I think because we're doing a morning show, you really focus in on that sleep factor. So it's just nice to sleep in. So I just see this article about what they say is the most productive people, the people that are most productive.
I saw this.
And it's the number one thing, like the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook.
Yeah.
By choice, wakes up at 3:45 in the morning every day. Yeah. Kohl's CEO, not that Kohl's is the scariest, but I would imagine if you're the CEO of Kohl's,
you're
CEO. Doing quite well.
Of course.
I didn't recognize the name, but the CEO of Kohl's, for example, wakes up at 4:30 every morning to go for a run.
Yeah.
Apparently, they said the
go-getters.
The key to life to being super productive is to wake up early, apparently.
I also know it's like not sleeping a lot, right? Like John Gruden is notorious for not sleeping a lot. I think Tiger Woods is notorious for like, you know, surviving on like 3 and 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah, I remember years and years ago, I read like a Clint biography. He was like somebody that slept like a couple hours per night.
So there are some people like that.
But they say the getting up deal is, and this is just, well, we're doing it because we have to. but that the people that get up early, they start tackling the day when there are minimal distractions. So the kids aren't up. There's less social media.
You're probably not watching TV at 4 a.m.
There's no one emailing or texting you at that time.
Maybe that's
and
what it
they
is.
Get going.
I just think they're more driven. But I mean, I have a good friend who loves to sleep in. He's super successful. He loves to sleep in, though. You know, like he cherishes his sleep.
Yeah, I mean,
and then
look,
he starts his day, you know, at 9:30.
Right.
Or whatever. Like a normal human.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously.
Well, I think 9:30 is pushing. I think most start
7:30,
8.
Yeah.
Kids got
to go
to
school. Does anybody have a 9 to 5 anymore where people actually go to work
I think
from
a lot
9
of people
to 5?
Have,
what's the average?
I think a lot of people have 9 to 5s. I did see
of course.
That there is more of a trend. Like if we ever, look, we're never going to be able to go back to the real world. But hypothetically, if we ever had to transition back to like our old lives pre-Junkies and had to get a job, they say that there's more of a push for a four-day work week, which maybe we're going to push for on the radio at some point. I know the big sillies
do
that.
My dream is a Stern Monday through Wednesday. I was thinking that was Stern.
Some reason I thought it was Tuesday through Thursday.
Monday through Wednesday. And he now starts his day at 7 a.m. He doesn't even start at 6 a.m. anymore. It's stupid.
Right.
Like, why should, you know.
Well, that study's stupid. For every one of those get up early stories, you hear another person say, make sure you get 8 hours of sleep. That's
well,
the key to
sleep.
Success.
You definitely need sleep. Now,
right,
this isn't saying that these people are going to live long lives. It's just
they're
saying that they're super successful.
Yeah, they get up early. They start tackling their to-do lists. It had some cheesy, what I thought, recommendations for life. Like, it said that a way to do this is to give yourself self-imposed rewards.
What?
So, like, if you do something on your to-do list, you give yourself, like, the good creamer for your coffee. It was just, that's where I start losing it, where people just come up with five ways to get more productive.
The other story that that Drabby gave us that we wanted to maybe touch on for a second is this interesting story. Be careful, Christmas Eve. They're saying that 10 p.m. Christmas Eve carries the highest heart attack risk of the entire year. There are more heart attacks.
Why?
At that, I don't.
Do we know why? Is it the stress of like putting things together? I think I'm going to have two big items that I have to put together before Christmas.
Yeah, I think they studied 238,000 heart attacks in Sweden over like a 15-year period. And 10 p.m. Christmas Eve had the highest rate of heart attacks. I think it might have to do with like an eating thing too, because I've also heard like Thanksgiving, there's a lot of heart attacks. Thanksgiving evening.
Now, Christmas Eve, we should let the listeners know, I'll be doing the show on Monday morning, Christmas Eve, I believe with cakes. Maybe with Jason, but I believe it's cakes.
Yeah, not with me.
Right, because cakes was off last week, so it's cakes.
Yeah.
Unless he's getting 3 weeks off.
No, cakes is off. Yeah, right.
So I'll be busy on Christmas morning, Christmas Eve morning.
But do you feel stress on Christmas Eve when you go to?
Generally, no. But what I could see is buying it to, like, I know my mom got this big item that I'm going to probably have to put together on Christmas Eve so that it's ready for Isabella when she comes down. In the past, I've done it for other kids where.
But that's
the night
not why
before,
people are having heart attacks.
Probably not.
Putting together toys for the kids.
Maybe you're having too much eggnog. I don't know.
I mean, there's something to it. They studied 280,000 heart attacks.
Yeah.
And there's no jump on New Year's Eve.
Have you ever felt, look, we're getting that age where people our age donk off from heart attacks.
Dude, I went to the hospital a couple years ago.
Or you had heart palpitations or something?
I didn't have palpitations. Remember, I was on the show and I said, I got to go.
What did it end up being? Was it like reflux?
No. I think I had pulled a muscle or something in my chest. But I was having the same symptoms because I was having tightness, shortness of breath. It was all classic heart attack symptoms. And I recognized them and said, you know what, guys, I think I better go in and get checked. When I went to the hospital and I told them my symptoms, they brought me in so fast. Like within a minute, I was under the table. They're ripping my shirt off. They thought I was having the big one.
All right, we got to get out of here. Grant and Danny, they're up next on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.